Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Producers who participated and were pooled in the federal order system in January of 2024 were determined to be eligible to vote in the referendum that was conducted during the month of December based on the ballots that were received. All of the orders were approved on Thursday, January 16th.
Dana Cole with the Ag Marketing Service on the federal milk marketing order amendment.
In that final rule, it contains the language that was in the final decision. It also provides the industry what the implementation dates will be, which is very important to help the dairy sector plan for 2025. Most all of the provisions that were contained in the final decision will be effective on June 1st.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
From this day forward, our country will flourish and be respected again all over the world.
In his inauguration speech, President Donald Trump.
We will be the envy of every nation, and we will not allow ourselves to be taken advantage of any longer. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first.
The new president addressed inflation.
I will direct all members of my cabinet to marshal the vast powers at their disposal to defeat what was record inflation and rapidly bring down costs and prices. The inflation crisis was caused by massive overspending and escalating energy prices, and that is why today I will also declare a national energy emergency. We will drill, baby, drill.
And wants to bring jobs back to the U.S.
America will be a manufacturing nation once again, and we have something that no other manufacturing nation will ever have, the largest amount of oil and gas of any country on earth, and we are going to use it. Let me use it. We will bring prices down, fill our strategic reserves up again, right to the top, and export American energy all over the world. We will be a rich nation again, and it is that liquid gold under our feet that will help to do it. With my actions today, we will end the Green New Deal, and we will revoke the electric vehicle mandate, saving our auto industry and keeping my sacred pledge to our great American auto workers. In other words, you'll be able to buy the car of your choice. We will build automobiles in America again at a rate that nobody could have dreamt possible just a few years ago. And thank you to the auto workers of our nation for your inspiring vote of confidence. We did tremendously with their vote.
And on the impossible?
In America, the impossible is what we do best. From New York to Los Angeles, from Philadelphia to Phoenix, from Chicago to Miami, from Houston to right here in Washington, D.C., our country was forged and built by the generations of patriots who gave everything they had for our rights and for our freedom. They were farmers and soldiers, cowboys and factory workers, steel workers and coal miners, police officers and pioneers who pushed onward, marched forward, and let no obstacle defeat their spirit or their pride. Together they laid down the railroads, raised up the skyscrapers, built great highways, won two world wars, defeated fascism and communism, and triumphed over every single challenge that they faced. After all we have been through together, we stand on the verge of the four greatest years in American history. With your help, we will restore America's promise, and we will rebuild the nation that we love, and we love it so much. We are one people, one family, and one glorious nation under God. So to every parent who dreams for their child, and every child who dreams for their future, I am with you, I will fight for you, and I will win for you.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Here's the challenge. Number one is, look, I want to be clear about something. The Panamanian government, particularly its current office holders, are really friendly to the United States and very cooperative, and we want that to continue. And I want to bifurcate that from the broader issue of the canal.
During his confirmation hearing, new Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
President Trump is not inventing this. This is something that's existed now for at least a decade in my service here. I took a trip to Panama in 2017. When on that trip to Panama in 2017, it was the central issue we discussed about the canal. And that is that Chinese companies control port facilities at both ends of the canal, the east and the west. And the concerns among military officials and security officials, including in Panama at that point, that that could one day be used as a choke point to impede commerce in a moment of conflict. That's going back to that. But I, earlier, before you got here, and I don't want to have to dig through this folder to find it again, but basically cited that how the immediate past head of Southern Command, just retired General Richardson, said she flew over the canal, looked down and saw those Chinese port facilities and said, those look like dual-use facilities that in a moment of conflict could be weaponized against us. The bipartisan China Commission over in the House last year had testimony and hearings on this issue, and members of both parties expressed concern. The former ambassador to Panama that's under President Obama has expressed those concerns. This is a legitimate issue that needs to be confronted. The second point is the one you touched upon, and that is, look, could an argument be made? And I'm not prepared to answer it yet because it's something we're going to have to study very carefully, but I think I have an inkling of, I know where this is going to head. Can an argument be made that they basically have, the Chinese basically have effective control of the canal anytime they want? Because if they order a Chinese company that controls the ports to shut it down or impede our transit, they will have to do so. There is no independent Chinese companies. They all exist because they've been identified as national champions. They're supported by the Chinese government. And if you don't do what they want, they find a new CEO and you end up being replaced and removed. So they're on the complete control of their government. This is a legitimate question, and one that Senator Rich had some insight as well. He mentioned that in passing, that needs to be looked at. This is not a joke. The Panama Canal issue is a very serious one.
And when it comes to treaties and agreements, they can only be binding if approved by the Senate.
To be binding beyond the administration that entered into it. This was the case of the JCPOA, which was being sold to people as a treaty, but it wasn't. And the reason why, it was a political agreement. It's basically a political arrangement between the current administration and the regime in Iran. And that's why President Trump had the authority to pull us out of it when he did. I think what's important to understand about treaties in general, and we talked about treaties here today with Mexico. There are a number of other treaties that people may not be aware of. Every treaty, by definition, okay, is a surrender of sovereignty at some level as a nation. But you do it, and you enter into it. Why? Why do you enter into a treaty even though you're surrendering some sovereignty? Because you've concluded that surrender and the benefit of it to the national interest or the national security far outweighs the surrender of sovereignty and the consequences of it. And that is why it's so critical that the Senate be involved in that deliberation, because an individual administration may get that calculus wrong. But when you have this overwhelming majority that concludes that it too agrees that surrender of sovereignty is exceeded by the benefit of the treaty, now you know you've increased your chances of having something that's good and makes sense. And so, you know, I agree with your view of it, and I think you know, that's the way I would hope we would pursue arrangements in the future if we enter into any.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Do you have ample bull power going into breeding season?
Focusing on spring breeding season, Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State Extension beef breeding specialist, ask, do you have enough bull power?
We go through our checklist of things to think about. What is essential in breeding season is to get as many cows bred at the early part of breeding season as we possibly can. If we have a cow that goes one extra heat cycle without getting bred, that equates to about 40 to 50 less pounds of weaning weight we have got following that next time we wean calves. So we want our cows to breed up quick. We need ample bull power to get that done. We're going to kind of approach this in different layers. First thing we can address at this point in the year, let's make sure those bulls are in a body condition score 6 to have batteries charged up and be ready to go out and cover cows. We know bulls are going to lose weight during the course of a breeding season, but we want them in good shape at turnout so that they're going to be charged up and ready to get more cows bred early on. Second thing we can do, monitor the health. A good deworming and vaccination program, same as what we follow with our cows, is going to be important for those bulls. We want to make sure we get a breeding soundness exam done on those bulls. This is the time to be getting that done. If we're doing that about a month out prior to turning out bulls, it gives us time to potentially recheck, gives us time to secure other bulls if we're going to need them to replace the bull that's gone bad. So a breeding soundness exam is always the best management practice going into breeding season. Leaving yourself some extra time as a buffer zone is important there. Final thought, how many cows should my bull be able to cover? So let's take a look at that relative to age of bulls. We always say that a bull that's beyond 2 years of age and up to about the age of six is pretty much in prime of life. At that age, bulls should be able to cover 25 and even up to 35 cows in a defined breeding season. Now, bulls younger than that is where we need to do a little math and think about making sure we've got an ample amount of bulls to turn out. Typically, if we're using yearlings, a 12-month-old bull that has passed a breeding soundness exam, we should be able to count on to cover 12 cows in that first breeding season. Now remember, it's the age of the bull at the time we turn him out. We know bulls are going to lose a little weight during breeding season, so if by the beginning of April, my 12-month-old bull has just passed his breeding soundness exam, and I intend to have him out there for 90 days, I need to count on him for 12 cows during that 90-day breeding season. Every month of age he is older than that, going into breeding season, just tack on an additional cow he should be good for. If a bull's 15 months old at the beginning of breeding season, he should be good to cover about 15 cows that first time. If he's 18 to 20 months of age, 18 to 20 cows is what he's good for. I hope this helps as you plan ahead and make sure you've got ample bull power going into the breeding season. Do the math. Don't short yourself on bulls. Again, in a defined breeding season, we want as many cows bred as quickly as possible. That subsequently leads to more calves born early in the breeding season and increases the profit potential of our cow-calf operation.
It's Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State Extension Beef Breeding Specialist. Learn more online at sunup.okstate.edu. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Today I will sign a series of historic executive orders.
Speaking during his inauguration, new President Donald Trump.
With these actions, we will begin the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. It's all about common sense. First, I will declare a national emergency at our southern border. All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my Remain in Mexico policy. I will end the practice of catch and release. And I will send troops to the southern border to repel the disastrous invasion of our country. Under the orders I signed today, we will also be designating the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. And by invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, I will direct our government to use the full and immense power of federal and state law enforcement to eliminate the presence of all foreign gangs and criminal networks, bringing devastating crime to U.S. soil, including our cities and inner cities. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no higher responsibility than to defend our country from threats and invasions, and that is exactly what I am going to do. We will do it at a level that nobody's ever seen before.
He also focused on the Gulf of America, Mount McKinley, and the Panama Canal.
America will reclaim its rightful place as the greatest, most powerful, most respected nation on earth, inspiring the awe and admiration of the entire world. A short time from now, we are going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, and we will restore the name of a great president, William McKinley, to Mount McKinley, where it should be and where it belongs. President McKinley made our country very rich through tariffs and through talent. He was a natural businessman and gave Teddy Roosevelt the money for many of the great things he did, including the Panama Canal, which has foolishly been given to the country of Panama after the United States. The United States, I mean, think of this, spent more money than ever spent on a project before and lost 38,000 lives in the building of the Panama Canal. We have been treated very badly from this foolish gift that should have never been made, and Panama's promise to us has been broken. The purpose of our deal and the spirit of our treaty has been totally violated. American ships are being severely overcharged and not treated fairly in any way, shape, or form. And that includes the United States Navy. And above all, China is operating the Panama Canal. And we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama. And we're taking it back.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I'm here today to tell you, if you use qualifications as your test, this is the easiest vote you'll ever take.
In Scott Bessent's confirmation hearing for Treasury Secretary, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
If your goal is to play like the election didn't happen, then I guess you'll vote no. That's just where we're headed in the Senate. When you lose an election, you get up and dust yourself off and you get ready for the next one. But I was honored when he asked me to introduce him, because I know this man, and America will be in good hands if he's our Secretary of Treasury. He deserves this job. He's qualified for this job. And President Trump, thank you for picking him. On behalf of all of us in South Carolina, we're extremely proud of you and we wish you well.
And what is at stake right now? Bessent said,
today, Americans face significant challenges in an economy that has not created enough opportunities for working men and women. We have an affordability crisis, a housing shortage, and for the first time in my lifetime, parents feel as though the American dream is slipping away from their children. The federal government has a significant spending problem, driving deficits that have averaged an historically high 7% of GDP during the past 4 years. We must work to get our fiscal house in order and adjust federal domestic discretionary spending that has grown by an astonishing 40% over the past 4 years. Productive investment that grows the economy must be prioritized over wasteful spending that drives inflation. As we begin 2025, Americans are barreling towards an economic crisis at year end. If Congress fails to act, Americans will face the largest tax increase in history, a crushing $4 trillion tax hike. We must make permanent the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and implement new pro-growth policies to reduce the tax burden on American manufacturers, service workers, and seniors. I've already spoken with several members of the committee, as well as leaders of the House, about the best approach to achieving these important goals together. As President Trump has said, we will unleash the American economy by implementing pro-growth regulatory policies, reducing taxes, and unleashing American energy production. The breadth and depth of our capital markets, along with predictable pro-growth tax policy and smart, updated regulation will continue to make America the most popular destination in the world for starting, growing, and taking public a business. And as we rebuild our economy and lay the foundation for the next generation of American competitiveness, we must use all the tools available to realign the economic system to better serve the interest of working Americans. For too long, our nation has allowed unfair distortions in the international trading system. President Trump was the first president in modern times to recognize the need to change our trade policy and stand up for American workers. If confirmed, I look forward to working with President Trump and members of this committee to do just that. Members of the committee, these are just some of many important goals that President Trump has laid out for me and others on his economic team. I firmly believe that if confirmed, and with your counsel and support, we can usher in a new, more balanced era of prosperity that will lift up all Americans and rebuild communities and families across the country.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our topic this week is window assist with calving, and we dig into that a little deeper by addressing the three stages of bovine parturition.
Dr. Mark Johnson is Oklahoma State Extension Livestock Breeding Specialist.
Understanding those three stages and what goes on in each is helpful when deciding if we need to assist a cow or heifer in the process. First stage, basically, is a little bit of dilation of the cervix. This can happen over hours or days. We may not notice this happening, or we may notice that cows or heifers have kind of separated themselves off from the herd. Perhaps they've lost a little bit of appetite. We may see a mucus string hanging from the vulva. Again, it can be a very deliberate process or something that happens pretty quick, but typically is easy to go unnoticed. Stage two is the actual delivery of the calf. And this is kind of where the action's at, so to speak. Stage two officially begins when we see presentation of the water bag at the vulva. And when we see the presentation of the water bag, we always say that's when we want to start our clock. There's ample research that shows that with a normal presentation of the calf, a mature cow is going to calve within 30 minutes of when we actually see the water bag. Now, a heifer that's not as large in her pelvic area and has not had a calf before can take up to 60 minutes after we see the water bag to actually calve. And so those are timelines to keep in mind. If we're looking at a mature cow, after we see the water bag, we should expect her to calve in about 30 minutes. A heifer can take up to 60. Stage three is actually shedding of the placental membranes or shedding the placenta. That's usually going to happen within 6 to 12 hours after the presentation of the calf. If we ever see retained placentas, we don't want to get aggressive in trying to pull those out. That is a topic actually for next week when we talk about how to address retained placenta in cow herds. But if we actually see that for a few days, we may want to administer some antibiotics or get in touch with our vet. So, back to this process of stage two, and how do we decide when we need to potentially assist with calving? Keep those timelines in mind. And if we see a cow or heifer that's not making adequate progress, or even one that looks like we're not seeing a water bag, but she's been struggling and straining for a while, we're probably going to need to do a vaginal exam. We want to keep cleanliness in mind. We want to be gentle. We want to wear protective gloves, OB sleeves, have lubricant, some kind of cleanser. And when we go in, if everything is normal in the presentation and the cervix is fully dilated, we're not going to feel much of that cervix. We're going to be able to feel the front feet of the calf. We should feel the split between the front toes on top, the dew claws underneath, and right behind that and above those front feet, we're going to feel the nose of the calf. If we can palpate and get a little farther back, the spine of that calf is going to be directly below the spine of the cow. That's how we're going to confirm we have a normal presentation. If the water bag is still intact when we go in and do that, we still got some time to potentially give that heifer or cow the opportunity to have that calf on her own. If the water bag is broken at that point, we're going to need to proceed with actually manual assistance in getting that calf out. If we've got an abnormal presentation, we know that vet-client relationship is critical at times like this. We're going to want to get in touch with our veterinarian because we may need assistance there. So That's a little bit on when to decide if we need to assist with calving, the three stages of parturition. I hope this helps, and I hope nobody has to pull a calf this year during spring calving season.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The breakdown of USDA's January look at dairy, courtesy of World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski. First, for production.
We lowered for both 2024 and 2025, mainly reflecting lower milk per cow estimates.
Yet year-over-year milk production is forecasted up from the previous month. Dairy product trade remains strong.
We're importing a lot of butter and cheese, but we're also exporting a lot of butter and cheese to serve other markets. Similarly, we've seen a lot of strength, especially domestically, in whey and non-fat dry milk demand.
The combination of tightening supplies and continued demand strength is reflected in month-over-month increases in all product and class prices for dairy.
The 2025 all-milk price, we raised 50 cents per hundredweight to $23.05 per hundredweight, and that would be up about 45 cents per hundredweight year over year.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.